May 5th, 1862, on a Saturday much like this one, except perhaps for the absence of W's in the national language, Mexican forces, against great odds, defeated French invaders who attacked the forts of Guadalupe and Loreto. The victory is observed throughout Mexico and also in its sister city-state, Vermont, on the anniversary of that day, Cinco de Mayo, which...
Cinco de Mayo!
Sí, sí,
yes, that's today! Cinco, yes, today! Yes, 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 yes!
Which roughly translated means a sinkful of mayonnaise.
I knew it meant something. I could never figure that out.
It did.
Now I understand.
I've done
research. Thank you. Thank you for your research.
But in Vermont, it's called Economic Day. And not simply because of the profusion of W's, the newly fjorded territory possessed at the time. Much of the credit for the triumph must go to Oneida McCoy, an economist who was auditing the forts for the Monta Bank of Vermont on the fateful day the battles occurred. Montebank had invested heavily in the two forts, with the idea of eventually foreclosing on them, shipping them back to the Montpelier area, then recontextualizing them as comedy clubs. Are you saying something?
No, I'm not. That's part of the piece.
Ah, okay. McCoy was sent to Mexico to surreptitiously inspect the fort's financial accounts. He disguised himself as a humorist, the better to test out the performance space prospects of the forts.
Like, we do that too.
We
disguise do. Disguise ourselves as humorists.
Oh, yes. McCoy arrived at Fort Guadalupe on May 1st and immediately sought an audience with the mayordomo, Benito Juarez. The administrationist appreciated the whimsical talents of McCoy, but also saw several chronic weaknesses in his delivery, and so nicknamed him... You're sure you're not saying anything here?
No.
Oh, okay.
I never speak.
No.
I never interrupt.
Never. And so nicknamed him Un Cómico del Día, the one-day comic. Juarez's analysis was borne out in subsequent performances by McCoy, when spectators remained puzzled by and a bit resentful of his jokes. Of course, how were they to know that he was really examining the fort's pecuniary records at the time? By May 5th, McCoy and his feeble quips had worn out their welcome, and Juarez was about to ask the Vermonter to quit the premises, when the French unceremoniously stormed the fort.
How would one ceremoniously storm a fort?
One would do it in full battle regalia.
And pomp and circumstance,
exactly.
And trumpeters and drummers and stuff?
The Edward Elgar music would be foremost.
Elgar? They wouldn't use Elgar.
They wouldn't?
No.
Not in 1862?
No, they would have to use Villalobos.
Ah, of course, yes. One of the first casualties was the dance hall floozy Monica de Qua. After providing a level of witty entertainment that Un Cómico del Día could only dream of, she had sneaked up on top of the west parapet to, as she put it, do my cocaine. As she snorted a line of pure Pepsi and jumped up in utter disorientation, a laser-guided arrow plunked her right between the eyes, and the Battle of Puebla was on. The fighting was fierce. Fatalities were mounting on both sides, and Oneida McCoy had no desire to sacrifice his life and career for this dingy and fiscally foolish foreign hellhole. So he slipped out Fort Guadalupe's back door and was nearly home free, home, of course, being a relative term here, when he was spotted and captured by the French Latrine Patrol. Neither spoke the other's language, so McCoy tried to proclaim his innocence and non-Mexican attributes using charades, some of which were inadvertently ribald. The patrol members found the antics highly amusing, and their laughter attracted other soldiers. The French, who would show equally eccentric tastes a century later in their adoration of Jerry Lewis, ceased their siege
of... Eccentric is just like an understatement for that, what that is.
Perhaps so, yes. The French ceased...
I'll tell you about the clown that cried someday.
Oh.
The movie that's never been released.
Whose was it?
Jerry Lewis.
Ah,
produced, directed, starred.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
We can feature it here somehow.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. The French ceased their siege of Port Guadalupe in order to attend to the hilarious shenanigans of poor McCoy. This gave Juarez the opportunity to marshal his own forces and subsequently rout the distracted French soldiers. When, a happy hour later, a Mexican sharecropper rushed into the fort with the news that the French had also assaulted Fort Loreto, 18 miles to the south, Juarez at once packed McCoy into his horse's saddlebags and rode hell-bent toward the fray. A quarter mile from the ruckus, he unleashed McCoy. Stunned and still in no man's land, and still in no man's land in the language department, he repeated his earlier gesticulations with identical results. The French abandoned their onslaught to watch McCoy's antics, and again the Mexicans regrouped and summarily made toast of the French. Oneida McCoy was proclaimed...
Oneida,
viva...
Wait. They toasted the French?
They did.
Ah, that's what I say. Amo Santé!
Oh, yes. Course, yes.
Cheers. One day comic. Okay. I get the 1 second comic.
Okay.
I have suspicion something's coming up.
Do you?
Yes, I have my little pen at the work.
Fine. Oneida McCoy was proclaimed a hero, and the 5th of May a day of commemoration for the Battle of Puebla. When determining a suitable name for the observance, a Greek etymologist discovered that Oneida McCoy, economic day, one day comic, Monica de Qua, and even Do My Cocaine was each an anagram of Cinco de Mayo.
Ah, yes!
And the name stuck.
Thank.
On this 310th special episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, the ebullient mood of a sinkful of mayonnaise permeates our very broadcast waves, for it is also economic day at KND headquarters, in the sense that this program and its radio burbs need a fiduciary shot in the arm. And here, with his virtual arm outstretched, to which is notably attached a hand in supplication.
I don't do that on the air.
Oh, all right, not in supplication, just a hand, is Calvos.
Yes, and we're going to finish listening to these tunes and then come back and accept pledges to
and supples to
this radio station, WGDR, because the number here is 802-454-7762, and it's Calvos and Damien, and we are here!
It's hot in the studio.
Yes, it is.
The flames are licking.
The flames are licking at the dollars. They're burning away. We have to raise only, $4,992 in this hour.
And
we're on our way because we already have a pledge. But let's listen to some music. 454-7762. We'll be back. Thank you. Oh, and a little bit of the next cut. There it was. What we do best on Calvus and Damien, and that's confuse and bewilder.
Ourselves.
Yes, we create duets, duets that were never intended to take place in the real world. That was a duet between Muhal Richard Abrams and Amy Knowles. You heard a combination of Float and Piano Duet Number 1 from their respective CDs, 2 times 10 times 10 times 10 plus 1, which if you can work that out.
Mm-hmm. Binary.
Yes, The Visibility of Thought by Muhal Richard Abrams. So there they are, two tunes
for
together
the price of
for the price of
your pledge
at 454-7762 in the 802 area code. We have our first pledge in already.
Oh, thank goodness.
So quickly it came. This is a pledge for $25 from, and we can't announce the name on the air, but it is here.
But is the check good? I wouldn't do that too
sound,
often.
The sound of the check. There it is. So the first pledge for today's K&D show, we want to raise all the balance of that money that we have to raise, which now is only $4,900. Let's see if I can do this. $63.
Yeah, if everyone would simply write a $4,000 pledge. Yeah,
that's
check.
Right. We could have a jump on next year.
Yeah. Plus, have a little bit of an after-pledge party.
That would be good.
Because there are administrative costs involved in pledging.
Oh, certainly. Yes,
yes. Indeed.
Where's my pencil? Yes, there it is. Oh.
That's a $400 pencil.
That is, yes, this is government issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
802-454-7762. In about 18 minutes at the top of the hour, we will continue our interview with Yannis Kyriakidis, recorded in Amsterdam, and since we're not going to interrupt that, we need you to give us that call during this next 20 minutes and the last half hour of the show as well. You certainly can interrupt us during the recorded interview, but we want to give that number over and over and over in that kind of annoying way that happens, you know, with radio stations during pledge drives.
Yes, you could be.
We try to be jolly, which we're not. You know, we're just miserable people.
Right.
454-7762. Calvus and Damien brings you stuff you just simply can't hear anywhere else. And interestingly enough, you know, there's a 2-page article on us in the latest issue of the Goddard magazine, which is kind of interesting.
Is it the article that you wrote?
I don't know. I didn't read it yet. I just sort of saw it there. It was in our mailbox, and I thought, well, isn't that nice? Photos and stuff with color.
That photo isn't of us.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Oh, fine.
It has a photo on the page.
Yes,
that counts.
It does.
454-7762. Oh, we're going to play you 6 minutes and 30 seconds of a new recording. We have just received Richard McCandless's piece called Voyager from 1999.
Speaking of Voyager. That's right. No,
seven of nine, what?
I was thinking
Annika, they're calling her now. Annika.
I was thinking of Flotter.
No. A character deserving to be killed. The only reason the holodeck should be totally removed from existence is Flotter.
I see.
Okay, here's Richard McCandless, Voyager. sorry. This was... never mind.
How many
episodes
are left?
I don't know, 5, I think.
You said that last week.
Maybe 4.
Okay, then
I forgot to record it this week,
fine.
So I don't know. This is Norman Weinberg on percussion, recorded in March 2000 at the University of Arizona. Richard McCandless, Voyager. And while you're listening, 802-454-7762. If you want a premium, just tell us what you'd like. We're good for it.
Thank you.
Richard McCandless. Now, that was an interesting piece in that it went from high energy to low energy.
Yes.
Very interesting. I don't know of any pieces that do that. Richard
Particularly
McCandless.
Percussion pieces.
Voyager, yeah. Maybe it's...
Does this betoken what will happen on the television program?
No, this is the other Voyager, the mid-70s Voyager. This is it going past the Oort cloud.
Oh, yes. Okay. Klingon cloud.
Klingon cloud, yeah. McCandless, Richard, Voyager, here on Calvus and Damian. And we're just about to play a piece by Pete Stollery, but it's going to be a 10-minute piece, bringing us to the top of the hour, our station ID and all those kind of cool things. But we need another pledge. We had our first one right at the beginning of the show for $25, and it's time for more. We're going to offer for a pledge of just about any amount that's not... dismissible as a gumball machine change.
Certainly not.
For a copy of Detritus of Mating, my Calvus's CD from 1997.
That.
Now a classic, of course.
Of course.
Anything more than 6 months old is instantly a classic.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it has artwork on the cover.
And it's sealed.
Sealed? You mean it's vacuum packed?
It is.
Hermetically sealed?
Yes, and nothing inside.
You can't get those anymore.
That's why it's a vacuum. 802-454-7762. Plus, we have other premium. Would you like to outline a few others, including those transmittens that are still over there?
Yes, and I also would like to point out that
yes.
for every Calvus and Damian pledge, the recipient will also come into possession of the Carmora papers.
Absolutely.
Yes.
The sci-fi novel par excellence.
Par. Yes, par, that's what it is.
Par mayonnaise.
Last week I noticed that the game Hidden Talents, the wackiest and tackiest thing about your friends, which was donated by Summer's Hardware, was available, and I was astounded that it was still there after a couple of days. It is still here for a $30 pledge, this wonderful game, and the cover of the box art is tacky enough. I think someone out there, someone who listens to us, could identify our program with the cover of this game box.
Yes, I think so. Plus, there's the handmade wood CD crate by Patty Garbeck for a pledge of $20, and that's a good one because it also contains three random CDs, and we'll toss in the fourth one. We'll toss in a couple.
The Carmora papers.
Yeah, and Carmora papers for that pledge. That would be a really good one. I like that because anything that we have should go in a crate. 454-7762.
And those are... Oh, another $50 pledge.
Yes.
A pair of custom-made hand-knit radio transmittens.
That's such a good word. And that's been here. They've been talking about those transmittens now for 2 weeks, and nobody has taken them. $50 gets you that hand-knit radio transmittens, no matter how many fingers you have, and custom-made by D.E.V.O.
Presumably, if one had been exposed to some radioactive waste, the mittens would be, they might fit your hand.
Yes, that's true. So are we about ready to play something as soon as we give the number one more time?
Let's see. It's Glipsob, G-L-I-P-S-O-B.
Otherwise known as 454-7762. Or if you're bored with that number, try 454-9962. That'll work, too. Okay, I guess we're just going to go right on with it now. We're going to start listening to something that's already begun playing. Pete Stollery from a brand new CD.
What do we know about this fellow?
Well, he sent stuff before. This is Sonic Art from Aberdeen, Glasgow, Huddersfield, and Newcastle. And Tyne. No, no Tyne. Works by Douglas Doherty, Alistair MacDonald, Pete Stollery, and Mark Alexander Bromwich. This is Pete Stollery's Short Stuff. We'll be back at the top of the hour. 802-454-7762.
Hi, I'm David Clary, and you're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your red alert for new music. It's clear that you've heard Little Richard, and you've heard Elvis Presley, and you've heard Chuck Berry, and you've heard Buddy Holly and guys like that, but you can tell that somehow you know that stuff.
On WGDR Plainfield, and somehow we know that stuff.
We know that stuff,
What we
yes.
don't know is the total amount that we're going to be able to raise by the end of our fundraiser, which is coming up real quickly, of another $4,900 to raise before the end of the fundraiser. Tomorrow? Is it tomorrow?
$3,000.
All right, if you're outside and you're doing gardening work, okay, you know, like that's acceptable. But get right inside, make a quick call, 454-7762. Also, if you're listening on the internet, and we know you're out there, we know you're out there. The country code is 1, the area code is 802, and the number is 454-7762. Would you like to add another language?
No, but
how about it? Yeah.
1, 2, 4, 7, 19 bitte. Wir für Geld mir haben. Wenn ich Geld habe, dann würde ich.
Not doing so well there.
Well, I have the frozen the mind of the.
I see. Okay.
7 und nach Schlecknick.
Okay. Wenn ich frage, was Geld geben, you can bella. Let's see if I can do this one. N. Het trends 1-802-454-7762. Or you can call.
That's Belgian, is it?
Yeah, it's something like that. Who knows? Anyway, let's go to some music. We'll start out by Yannis Kyriakidis, who we're about to go to the interview, and we'd love to have that pledge. 802-454-7762. We'll take it over the course of the next hour when we will not make those announcements. So please, write down that number, 802-454-7762.
But I think you were...
I can't do it. I can't switch the language. I can't switch languages. This makes the brain fry.
And I think what you've done in the interview by subliminally asking for pledges is quite effective.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked for me.
Now, here's some subliminal music as well.
Mm-hmm.
We can listen to a little bit of... Well, let's put it over here so we can mix it in when the interview starts. This is a little bit of a piece for harpsichord and dance, music by Yannis Kyriakidis called Bird, and then we'll pick the interview up as we go into that.
Is it playing?
Yeah.
We're back with Janis Kinnikidis here in Amsterdam, and we were just off mic and talking about, I was introducing to a piece of mine that used the numbers 1 to 20 in Czech, and he said, well, isn't that funny? Go ahead, this forward.
No, it's funny because like this piece of mine, Spi, a conspiracy cantata, is based on, you know, a lot of people may have already know of it because it's quite famous. A couple of 3-4 years ago, the CD came out of recordings of number stations on shortwave radio, which basically government agencies around the world communicating to their spies in the field using this kind of coded number messages, which kind of vary in form from phonetic alphabet to numbers or and so like. All agencies, different agencies use it, like CIA, Mossad, you know, the old KGB, and the Czech, as it happens also, the Czech secret police, the STB. And so, yeah, there's some numbers in Czech that I used in the voice, and we had to also get the pronunciation right, which is quite tricky. Like, this, like number 3 is like
three,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
4, I think.
Oh, right, 4, and the singer really had to have a a good session with a Czech guy to really get the not that it really mattered, but you know, like it was nice if it was, but the like numbers in whatever Chinese, Spanish, Russian, English, you know, so. In fact, the whole piece is mostly numbers and words, like, that's funny, anyway, this piece is 45 minutes long, and it was one of the pieces that when we were talking before about commissioned pieces, this piece I just found a nice idea, and just,
and
it was
just
a piece for two voices, piano and electronics, and just wrote it, and there was like a theater interested in doing something, so the opportunity came to do it, and then it was such a nice experience because I can develop the piece through the couple of months with the musicians, and then we performed it, and I rewrote it, and we performed it again in different places. In the end, now we performed it say 20 times.
Oh, really? That's
and just to simply have the chance to work with friends, develop a piece, and like. You know, rewrite some bits if you want to, and finally now we've recorded it like on CD, and it's out, and it also like won this prize, this Gaudiamus competition.
Yeah, Gaudiamus prize. That's just cool.
Which is like complete, like I find it very cool because like often like I had a piece done in the festival like in '94, piece for saxophone quartet and MIDI piano, and like I was a bit depressed by the whole sort of. New music scene of that, because generally I found most of the music very academic, and I'd think, well, I don't really belong in this world, really. And then I went to the festival like a year ago, and then that was when Michelle won the prize.
Right.
And then I found it quite nice.
That was Michelle
van der Aa, yeah, who's like is a good friend of mine, and I thought, oh, they're opening up to different kinds of music. And then when I heard that Joe Kondo was going to be on the jury, and I always wanted to meet him, and in fact go and study with him maybe at one stage, but I think going to Japan wasn't so feasible for me at that time, and so I thought, oh, I'd love to meet him. So I entered this piece thinking, you know, it's like a 45-minute piece, you know, it's a bit weird, you know, it's not, you know, it doesn't necessarily show this kind of compositional virtuosity that you need to show in these competitions.
Right.
So, but I mean, somehow it was got selected and it won the prize. I think partly because it happened to be the jury was Nicholas Collins,
who
also known and this Hague school composer, Cornelis de Bont, whose music I really loved. So it's three composers whose music I really like. So I guess this wasn't a coincidence. Wasn't that much of a... It was a coincidence.
Yeah, but still, who expects?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, that's great. That's really exciting. God, I'm surprised. Let's change a little bit. I want to ask you about a couple of pieces specifically.
Yeah.
I was very attracted by the choice of orchestration and what you did with the small excerpt I heard of Bird.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that choice, particularly the choice of orchestration and then what you...
Well, with Bird, that was actually a dance piece, mm-hmm. And we decided to use virginal. I mean, it was like based on the music of William Byrd, and so I knew his music a little because I was in England. I was a choir boy for until I was 16.
Choir boy.
Yeah.
Have you survived the night?
Yeah, exactly. But I was from the age of like 11 till 16, actually my voice broke quite late, so I was singing like sopranos quite long. But anyway, so I loved the choral music of William Byrd, and then I didn't know the keyboard music so well, so when I heard it, I was really, I loved it also because of its its rhythmic liveliness, especially that, you know, the dances and the shifts between two and three, and also the sort of straight harmonic. The keyboard music isn't so contrapuntal, but it has this kind of rhythmic harmonic interest,
and a great harmonic purity, especially if you do it in the original intonation.
In the mean tone tune, exactly. Yes. So anyway, I got really attracted to the music, and then so I sort of took the idea. It was so on the one hand we had the idea of the keyboard music, which the social to me was music that was often performed at home. You know, it was like music entertainment, like where, you know, and often the music would be played by you know, young girls at home, and it was, you know, you thought that the social function. I was interested by the social function of the music, that it wasn't pertaining to be high art necessarily, but it was you know, very refined music, and so all this is a collection of the Fitzwilliam virginal book. So on the
very
one
well-known collection,
which
has been reissued at least in the United States by Dover Publications.
Yeah, exactly. I have
it's
that.
It's kind of the standard text if you were going to study a little bit of early music.
Yeah.
You got to have that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. and so it was that idea, and also the whole question of the virginal, which in a way it's an instrument that's gone out of use, and it went out of use because it's such a quiet instrument.
It's extremely quiet. It's the virginal and the clavichord have a similar mechanism. We're talking about the same one.
Yeah,
with the tangent, which is a small metal striker, which hits the string, lifts up the string when striking it, and it vibrates from the bridge to the tangent, and then there's a muted section from the tangent to the pin block. So you hear both a kind of a striking tone and a sounding tone.
And the dampening
of that, plus because of the flexibility of it, you can actually do a thing called babung, which is a kind of vibrato that you can do on the strings of the virginal by rocking the keys.
I didn't use that, no. And I but it's true, like it's the note is alive after you've pressed the note,
yes.
And it's And I love the very warm sound of the virginal. The harsh squid has more of a harsher, like a more clinical sound. The virginal has this, deep, warm sort of...
And extremely quiet. It's hard to even imagine in our modern world that you could even hear the instrument.
So in a way, with that piece, I kind of... I took the idea of like a sort of... just an instrument which is out of date, and I took that to also mean like generally everything, all these technologies that, had some use once and then and then just stopped. So in a way, the piece in the music, I try and bring out the sort of, let's say, the popular aspect of the music. So it's in the dance aspect. So there's a lot of very sort of rhythmic things, and I use sort of all the samples I use were from the virginal and also from, any kind of sound I got from the virginal, even its box, the box that it was in, I just sampled everything. And also slight, this alienation from, the technology itself. And it's quite a weird piece. It was for dance, so serves the function for the dance. I mean, altogether, it's like 60 minutes of music. And so, that was performed live with the virginal player, Zohar Shafi.
We'll take a quick break there, and we'll get back to the interview. We heard Bird at the beginning, at the top of the hour. So what we're going to do now is play the other piece, or parts of the other piece that he talked about in this part of the interview. He talked about Spee from Conspiracy Cantata.
Yeah, Desi, he mentions that, many times.
Yes, this is with the number stations and such. Right. We can't hear it all because it's very long. It's about an hour. We're going to hear a part from the beginning and see how long that will take us. Very interesting. Tune called, different.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah,
here it is. Spee by Yannis Kyriakidis.
Nine.
From Conspiracy, cantata by Yannis Kyriakides. And shall we go back to the interview?
I think you, well,
we'll
yes,
let this run a bit underneath.
Yes, and, that'd be nice.
Since it's a long piece, and then he'll start talking about Panay, and we'll come back at the end of the interview to actually play Panay, so we won't do that right off the top.
And
so
how do you spell Panay?
P-N-E, as in pneumatic, except it's in the Greek pronounced P.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has a... he used three-letter names for his pieces, they were actually parts of the words. So that's all.
All right.
They're just like Conspiracy Cantata. The S-P-I in the middle of the word is how he gets named Spi for this piece. Conspiracy Cantata.
What a clever lad.
Clever, and back to Amsterdam.
Yannis Kyriakides is our guest on Calvus and Damon, sitting here on the looking out the window on a small street in Oudvest in Amsterdam.
So yeah, that piece.
And will you pronounce it, please?
Pne. I mean, like, yeah, I called it Pne, and then I sort of Pne for Pneuma, Pnoi. It's all like derivatives of. Often, like I went through this phase of having three-letter titles because I wanted a certain. I used like three. Often, like from Greek roots.
Right.
You know, which like little prefixes,
right.
Which. Are used in different words.
So and I like this prefix, so in English we have words like
pneumatic, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Such that pneumatic exactly, yeah. is prefix.
And so it was like a, yeah, it was like the piece. It was asked by this bassoon player to write this piece, and I don't really have an affinity so much with bassoon. In fact, it wasn't one of my favorite instruments. And I had to be convinced in a way that it was like a, about the instrument. And she was a very good friend, so she is a good friend, so I decided to write the piece anyway. And so what I was interested about was its kind of all the peripheral noises of the bassoon. Like it's such a, in a way, it's such a clumsy instrument.
Oh, yeah, it's got all kinds of rattles and bangs and wheezes and such.
Yeah, and even the. Yeah, like the way, you know, in classical, Western classical music, we try and reach a real refinement of the sound.
Yeah, we try to lose the sound of the key clicks and everything and only have the purity of the reed noise,
as it were,
and the tuning of the tube.
Exactly, yeah. And I like this kind of dirty sound of the reed, of the keys, of notes that didn't quite sound. And like, in a way, with the sort of sound order of the piece, it was kind of influenced by the sort of double reed instruments in Greek folk music and this kind of circular breathing, just ongoing musicality, like music that you get in northeast Greece in Pontic region of Turkey, and like the bagpipe music or the zurna music. So And in, also in the same way with the piano, I really tried to get all the just noises of the piano. So it was a lot of key sounds and playing inside the piano, and the main like rhythm, like rhythmic drive in the piece is given by the pedal of the piano, just going up and down. So,
and the piano, for the listeners who aren't aware, I mean, you can see the mechanics of a bassoon. The piano's mechanics are disguised, and they're if you add up all the pieces of the piano, thousands of them, the mechanics of a single key with its escapements and its felts and its leathers and its little straps and such to make it work. It's really a mechanical work of genius, but there's a lot of noise. If there were no strings, you'd have a percussion instrument of high caliber
In fact, how it went with the piece is like I wrote because often like now, and one of the musical things that I'm interested in is polyphony. I mean but the polyphony that I like working is just like layers of really different rhythmic times. So some very very slow layers, some very fast layers. But just basically rhythmic polyphony. Often like. Our music is has a high rhythmic energy, and so what I wrote for the piano, like sometimes was like 4 or 5 part polyphony, and it was just too much for the pianist to do actually. And then they sort of asked me if I would, redo the piece, simplify it a bit, or add another instrument. And as they were also using a cello player, I sort of rearranged it with a cello, which kind of lost the concept of the piece. So in this recording, it's with the cello, still has all the musical material, but actually redid the piece. Then they asked me to redo it if I can do it just for the duo with electronics. So then I used this kind of sampled layer where I used the sounds, really the sounds of the bassoon and the piano. So that often happens with me, like I write a piece and then I do like 3 different versions of it for different situations. So
very economical.
But in this version it was more like getting the sort of the actual music of it out. And like that influence was because a few years ago I really got into trying to find my roots, let's say, like I was talking about. And one of them was I was really fascinated by, not many people know this, but in the sort of 14th and 15th century in Cyprus, there was a French court and had a very highly developed music there, polyphonic music there, which was like from this Ars Subtilo, from Avignon, France. So a lot of the musicians, the French musicians who were imported into Cyprus to play for the court there. And so you have, there exists still like 4 volumes of manuscripts, all by anonymous composers, of motets, ballads.
In Cyprus,
yeah. And it's called the Torino Codex, because finally it ended up in Torino. It's called the Cypriot Polyphony. So anyway, so it was this kind of strange anomaly in history that you had in this kind of colony, this French colony out in Cyprus, which it became a French colony because after the Crusades, which was Richard the Lionheart, let's say, conquered it, and then once they'd left, the French Crusaders set up court there. So it was the Lusignans. And, it passed to different people eventually, like the Venetians, then the Ottomans. But I really was fascinated by this really complex rhythmic polyphony there. Somehow this piece, Pnair, I sort of explore that much more. It's like it's all pentatonic also. It's very simple. I wanted a very sort of simple, clear, very open, like harmonic world. So it's all, everything's just.
That's what you were talking about earlier. Yeah. That one world is simple, while the other one is complex.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I mean it's pentatonic. It modulates all the time though, but it has a very open sound because of that. And In a way, yeah, I mean, still all the pieces I've done up till now, like from like 4 years ago, have this very sort of modal, simple element, yeah, the harmony.
And modal, yeah. Insects as well. Insects, yeah. And drum machines.
It was also one of the pieces that I sort of wrote in Greece when I was when I was working, like especially like in summer, like my whole room got full of insects. Also, and you know, from the crickets outside. Sometimes a cricket would come in the house, and you have this amazing like electronic sound, like just next to you.
We get them every fall.
Oh yeah.
They will come in the house because it's starting to get cold, and you hear them in all the corners.
Yeah. But some nights where there's no wind, it would be like night of the living insects. It's like the whole place is just full of, so for a laugh, I sort of like caught a few, put them in a plastic box, and stuck a microphone inside. But I did let them go afterwards. Yeah. I did treat them with respect.
Did you have them sign releases? Who's your rights agency?
Yeah, exactly. and then I thought, you know, that sound is just such a great. I love these raw electronic sounds, and like, I just thought, you know, like, I don't know, just when you know, like, you thought that all these kind of mating rituals and like all the functions of insect sounds, the fact that their sound is just their body, you know, that
right.
It was just. I just sort of drew a connection with the raw like dance music, drum machine music, mm-hmm. that we listen to, and so then I just sort of wrote this piece with incorporating the insect sound and drum machine, a very sort of just a fun piece, has more to do with pop music and classical, and then I added a voice to it because also to increase the possibility to perform it, and I wrote it for my girlfriend who's a singer. So often when we had this program that we toured together with the two singers and the piano for Spee, and then together we performed this piece, Tetix with the singer, and also Eva with one of the other pianists. So it was more like I wanted to make a version that we can just perform.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is nice. And the way she performs it is great because she has this very sexy presence on stage, and it's really, it's really this whole thing about sort of kind of mating ritual and sort of territorial sort of, I don't know.
That's
so
good. Yeah. So where are you headed with your composition? Would you have a piece you're working on now? A couple of.
I just yesterday.
Where are you going in 20 years?
Yesterday I just finished a piece. It's going to be done with the Asker Ensemble and the Holland Festival, and it's with film, it's like live film and sort of live orchestra with film, and it's kind of a dance film. It's a collaboration with these two, like a dancer and a filmmaker that I've been working with for the last 3-4 years, and that piece is about a rhombos. It's basically using two bull roarers, and it's just all the sounds are just, you know, circling around. It's all like sounds that go yeah. But I've got some quite nice commissions, like bigger commissions, like this kind of music that I'm interested in doing now is really music that is performed in its own space that you make. So a lot of them are evening pieces, like a piece for the Slager Groep Den Haag with called Strobos, which is with for like snare drums, electronics, live electronics, and strobes, and four strobes, and that's also kind of that's the piece I'm going to just start now, and that's also a very long piece. Probably, you know, that will have like really in the area of drumming, this kind of sort of minimalist piece that unfolds over a long time, and it's very sort of sense, you know, really works on your senses, and I want to get a very sort of strong sound world of you know, electronic drums and disco kind of sensation. And then I've got this, yeah. And then they got this piece with the Devil Harding, this Dutch group, and that's also like an hour long piece. And I'm going to collaborate that with this photographer friend of mine, and we're going to make like piece based on I call it like a composition in spatial sound and temporal image. So it's about like it's we're going to use like six or so projectors, and with sound directly on the video, and it's going to be like still frames which are like composed in a very sort of musical way, mm-hmm. let's say rhythmic way, with the orchestra, with the Devil Harding, this kind of 15-piece band, say, with their sounds being going through like delays and reverbs and really getting the sense of like a spatial sound with these moving images. I mean, that's
the Harding's an interesting group. There, Louis Andriessen,
kind
of anti-establishment ensemble. What, 15, 20 years ago?
Yeah, exactly. Longer, they're still going strong. In fact, and it's mostly, it's like sax, trumpets, trombones. It's like sort of brass sound, which I don't really have such an affinity with, to be honest. But I like their mentality. So I like that. I end up working with these type of groups that aren't completely in the sort of classical world. So I'll never write an orchestra piece, and it doesn't interest me to write orchestra music. And I like working.
You would turn down a commission, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
Oh, good. I'm glad we had this on tape.
I would because. Okay.
You don't have to
depend
on
it.
No further.
Hand on heart.
Oh, we have run out of time.
Okay.
So.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, Kitakidis. Thanks so much for joining us on Calvus and Payne.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's been a long way.
Yeah, it's nice seeing you again.
Nice
seeing
you again.
Parts 1, 2, 3, and 6 from Spee, a conspiracy cantata by Yannis Kyriakidis.
Unsettling in parts.
Yes, wonderful piece. K-Y-R-I-A-K-I-D-E-S, in case you want to know how to spell his last name, Yannis Kyriakidis. Interviewed last month, all the way back to March now, I guess.
Is it?
In Amsterdam, yeah, over a month ago. And now we're going to play his piece, Pne, from the first three letters of Pneuma, for bassoon, piano, and cello.
This is real easy listening, is it?
This is more of the same sort of easy listening, the kind of non-confrontational disco stuff for bassoon.
Yeah.
I love this. This is the first thing of his that I heard, and I thought this was just dandy. Here it is, by Yannis Kyriakidis. This is Pne. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Kyle Gann.
Hi, Brandt. This is Mary Jane Lee.
Hello, this is Michael Mannion.
This is Gwyneth Walker.
I'm Mary Gunn, and I'm here to say, give it up.
You are listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar.
Here on Red Alert for New Music.
Here on WGDR Plainfield. That's one of our goodie, our goodie ones. That's the special fundraising ID.
Right, that's so people who are listening know that we are still in need of some pledge persons.
Absolutely. 802-454-7762. If you enjoyed that interview with Yannis Kyriakides, and even if you didn't, even if it made you disturbed, upset, and bothered, which I can't imagine it would have.
Well, I mean, I was bothered a little bit.
Well, you're bothered by everything. You're bothered by everything today. You picked up, we have previewed probably 40 CDs over the course of the past 2 hours here in the studio.
That's right.
And you have rejected almost every single
almost
one of them.
Yes, that's because that's what we do. That's part of our job. We filter out the bad music, in our opinion, and play only music that we think will
red alert you.
Red alert you, not rankle you. Where's it? I get the rankles. We get the rankles, and
I see you're breaking out. You've been breaking out all day today with a very bad case of rankles.
Spring is breaking out all over.
Yes, even it says rankler on your jeans.
Ah, that's
802-454-7762. Stop us in our humorless tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Make us play some music. Do it now, because Calvos and Damien is here for another half hour with good tunes. You have something queued up, don't you?
Yes, and I'm not sure exactly what this all entails, but I did like the name of the tune. This is from a CD called Refractions by Michael Clark, and the piece is called Upvaknadni.
What?
Upvaknadni.
What?
Upvaknadni. It's for trombone and piano. And
Well, good. Well, we'll listen to that in just a second.
Yes, but
first, 802-454-7762, Glipsob, as you would say. Or if you don't like those, there's always 802-454-9962, the alternate number, the underground number, as it were.
Yeah, I don't know what that spells. Probably something equally
9962.
Arcane.
WXY.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Difficult.
Yes, 99.
That's harder.
802-454-7762. Give us a pledge. There are lots of things to choose from. We can't name them all. If you want some suggestions on the telephone, call up and say, what can I have for a pledge of $20 or $25 or $50 or $200? A photo of a Latin jazz or Brazilian musician by Creative Music Photography. $200 or $100 for a sushi cake delivered to your home by David Halle. So all sorts of things. There's a phone ringing now, so that's what we like to hear. 802-454-7762, Calvos and Damien. And we'll be back, of course, next week with more interviews. But in the interim, we need some support because that transmitter out there just chews through. You know, if you've gotten your electric bill this winter, I'm sure you have. You can't imagine what it would be like to run a 900-watt. I mean, 900 watts is a little less than a toaster. And imagine if you had your toaster on 18 hours a day in sheer electrical chewing through. That's an enormous amount of money. So, all right, enough of that.
Who's next week?
Vanessa Lan.
Ah, the piano player.
No. She
writes for piano.
Yes, she does. But
okay.
She also has, we interviewed her in a cafe in Central Station in Amsterdam, so it has that kind of ambiance to it.
Mm-hmm.
Vanessa originally is from Massachusetts. She's been living in Europe for the past 10 years during the Clinton administration. I think she was running away.
I see.
Anyway, she's very funny. She's also probably the most detailed describer of her own music.
Oh, good.
Yes, much fun. So we'll start our interview with Vanessa Land next week. 802-454-7762 for your pledges. If you're calling from outside the country, the country code is A1. And operators, that's us, are standing up for your call.
We are now.
And you're going to play that piece, which is, yes. Once again...
It is... By Michael Clark.
Yes.
Uvaknadi. For probably trombone and piano.
By Michael Clark, from his CD Refractions. That was Uwe Knaddi. Calvus thinks it should be pronounced differently, but he has that perspective. I want to follow this up with some recordings that you just can't hear anywhere else. 454-7762 will keep these tunes coming over the radio waves. This is a CD from David Lee Myers called Ouroboros, and there is no identifying information on it. It just says processor music. And he has 12 different processor tunes. I guess they're tunes. We'll hear three of them, and that may take us to the bottom of our show, or there may be time for something else. This is so freeform that we won't know until we get there. Three selections of processor music by David Lee Myers.
Thank you.
You are listening to processor music, well, I guess I'm listening to it as well, by David Lee Myers from a CD called Ouroboros. There is no identifying information on this CD. We've heard tracks 2, 4, 7, and now we're listening to track 8. There is a change, but a minor change. Processor music. Can't hear it anywhere else but here. And here is Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar. Here is also 454-7762 if you're keen to pledge. And pledge an obscene amount of money or just a small token of your appreciation of this station and this radio program. Next week, we begin the interview with Vanessa Land, which Calvos did last month. Weeks following, we have other interviews, and the big Ottawan Festival comes in August on the 25th and 26th. Big news. So, that's Calvus and Damien for this week. Tune again next week. Send those pledges, call, or email. You know the number? That's the show.
A production of Alltech Media.